I'm going to sit here because I don't want you to think. No, I'm going to sit. Thank you very much. Because I don't want you to think of this as a lecture from a boring and stuffy professor. And I don't want you to think of this as a sermon from a pastor. I just want to sit here and talk to you as if this were a fireside chat. And I'm really excited about this opportunity to be here. We've known Jason and Stacy Plummer and their kids over the years. And I'm actually torn today between giving this chat to you and just going and playing with their kids. I've always been absent-minded, but at least I'm a professor. So now I've got this on. How's that? Well, we need to begin with some foundations. We need to begin with some principles. And I'm not a practical man, but we will have some practical illustrations a bit later on. And so my role is to try and lay down some principles that will direct and guide and lead us as parents who are seeking to please the Lord in our families. And the Bible is not as complicated as many people make it. So, as a matter of fact, there are most of what the Bible has to teach about parents is in three places: Deuteronomy chapter 6, the book of Proverbs, and Ephesians chapter 6. And I just want to read those texts because that may be the most important thing that I use my voice for today. So, Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 to 9. This is the covenant that God made with Israel. If you take this article out of your packet, everything is right there. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and that to the fullest extent. These words that I am instructing you today shall be on your mind. You must repeat them to your children. Talk about them when you sit in your house, and when you walk along the road, and when you lie down, and when you get up. Bind them as a marker on your hand, and let them be like a sign on your forehead. Write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. There's a couple of passages from Proverbs. One from Proverbs 3. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you prosperity. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart, then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. Proverbs 4, we have here a little window on a model home. Listen, my sons, to a father's instruction. Pay attention and gain understanding. I give you sound learning. So do not forsake my teaching. When I was a boy in my father's house, still tender and an only child of my mother, he taught me, and he said. We have the famous verse from Proverbs 22, train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. And finally, Ephesians 6, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Now, I'm not going to go through everything that's in this article, but I want to emphasize three points that are here. The first point that in bringing up our children, in raising our children, in educating our children, we are passing along a world and life view, a whole way of life, a whole philosophy of life. Notice these commands. Repeat or teach these words. You see that in Deuteronomy 6. Train in Proverbs 22. Bring up or rear in Ephesians chapter 6. So the first principle, according to the Bible, is that education is all-encompassing. The Bible does not divide education up into subjects the way we do in our schools today. And we have a tendency of saying, well, these are religious subjects and these are secular subjects. The Bible doesn't divide things up that way. Notice when it says in Deuteronomy, these things which I am teaching you today, you shall repeat them or teach them. What does it refer to when it says these things? Well, they're all of the commands in the book of Deuteronomy. And the commands in the book of Deuteronomy apply to all of life. They talk about boundary markers in farming, which has to do with economics, and then it talks about boundary markers in sex. So the instruction that Moses is giving the people and that the parents are to give their children is encompasses all of life and applies to everything. Notice these words in Deuteronomy 6. You shall bind them as a marker on your hand, and they will be signs between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. This speaks directly to all that we do. Notice, you shall write them on your hand. So yeah, that's symbolic of everything that we do. These instructions are for everything that we do. Write them between your eyes. Write them on your forehead. So that means this instruction is for everything that we think. Write them on your gates. I don't have a diagram with me, but I could show you what a gate looks like in an ancient city in Israel or in the ancient Near East. The gate is not just two doors where you enter a city. It's a whole building, and it's really like the town hall where all the business takes place. And so when he says, write them on your gates, he means that this instruction is to affect your thinking about all of your business life. And then put them on your doorposts. That means that these instructions apply to your home life. So the things that Moses is teaching the people and that the parents are to teach the children has to do with everything that we think, everything that we do, all of our business, and all of our home life. So there's no distinction here between art and science, arts and science, sports and electronics, computers. This is a world and life view that applies to everything. Some Christians, notice this, who are concerned about Christian schools, do not really understand the biblical teaching that education entails a world and life view. So this doesn't mean that when we... Some people think that if you have a Christian school, well, that means when you teach mathematics, somehow you have Jesus in the examples. Or when you're teaching history, you try to show it from the view of God's providence. No doubt those things can be helpful. But think about it this way. If we were to open those blinds and you were to look out the window, I would ask you, well, what do you see? I've never done it, so I don't know what you would see. Maybe you'd see a tree. Maybe you'd see the parking lot. Maybe you'd see some cars out there. What would happen to you if I said, well, did you see the window? That would be kind of a strange question, wouldn't it? But everything that you see through a window. And when you teach your children, what you're passing along to them is not just the things that you're seeing out there, you're passing along to them the window that you're using to look at the world. And that's why it's important for us to realize that that the Christian faith is about a whole world and life view. It's about a window that we use to look at the world. And as you instruct and teach your children, you're passing along. You're not just talking about the things out there unconsciously. You don't have to talk about the window. They will pick that up automatically. They will learn to see the world through the window that you are using. All right, the second main point that we see in these Bible passages is that all three of these passages, the book of Deuteronomy, the book of Proverbs, and I don't have time to spend 2 weeks teaching the book of Proverbs, which would be a fun thing to do, but the book of Proverbs is a parenting manual. So in the book of Proverbs, the king is raising his son and teaching his son, and he's writing down all of his instruction for the benefit of every father and mother in Israel, so that every father and mother in Israel can know how to raise their children rightly too. So the book of Proverbs is a parenting manual, and in a few short verses in Ephesians, Paul draws on that Old Testament heritage and shows us that what we are responsible for under the new covenant, those of us who by faith in Jesus Christ are not under the old covenant, but are under the new covenant established by the blood of Jesus Christ. What do we see here? We see that in all three texts, education is a parental responsibility. Look at what Paul says. Paul addresses fathers and commands them not to exasperate or provoke their children to anger, but to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. In Deuteronomy, those who are entrusted with repeating these words are parents. Did you see that? Moses is not addressing the prophets, the priests, and the king. It's the parents he's talking to. And we see that in the book of Proverbs as well. And so the main responsibility for educating your children, for training your children, for raising your children, is you, the parent. And I'm going to indicate this in a couple of ways. First of all, we're going to look at the state for a minute or two, and then we're going to look at the church for a minute or two. By way of application, we can say that education is not primarily the responsibility of the state. According to the Bible, it's not the responsibility of the state. It's the responsibility of the parents. The state may function as an arm of the parental teaching. There may be institutions out there that can help you as a parent raise your children, teach them what you want them taught, instruct them in the way that you want them instructed. But it's not the responsibility of those institutions. It's your responsibility. In North America, public education was introduced many years ago to provide equal opportunity for all, the poor as well as for the rich. So if we could go back 150 years, only 150 years, we would see that education was mostly for the rich and that people who were poor were just not educated. And so the idea of public education was established in North America so that education could be provided for the poor as well as for the rich. That's what is meant historically by the concept of public education. This worked for many, many years because all of the people who were involved in that education had the same world and life view. They had the same overall view of the world. But if anything should be obvious to you today, it should be very clear that in the country of America or in Canada, there are a huge variety of competing world and life views. And this is nowhere more apparent than in American politics, where you see this country is divided right down the middle on very opposite world and life views, ways of looking at the world and how we should understand and live. And so this makes it really important for parents to realize that this is their responsibility. In fact, in the early 1920s, big business got into bed with the university. There's a little ditty here. It's called a limerick. There was a young lady from Kent who said that she knew what it meant. When men took her to dine, gave her cocktails and wine, she knew what it meant, but she went. And what we're trying to say here is that before the 1920s, universities were funded privately. And in the 1920s, big business got into the act and supplied money to the universities, and now business dictates what the university teaches. So not only do we have worldviews that are completely opposed to what we find in the scripture in the public schools and in the universities, but we have the demands of big business as well, which very frequently are not driven by any Christian principle whatsoever. So we have to, as families, take back the responsibility that education is not the responsibility of the government, it's our responsibility. Secondly, it's not the responsibility of the church. So we can say, sometimes we think of education as secular or religious. That's really a false distinction. But if we have to use the term religious education, the primary responsibility for giving this to our children is us. It's not the pastor. It's not the elders. It's not the deacons. So it's very the Bible is very clear and very simple on this topic. I like to be clear and simple. Most of my life growing up in the church, I found a lot of things very complicated. And after studying the Bible for 40 years, I've discovered the Bible's a lot more simple than most people think, or at least than most scholars think it is. So it's very clear that parents are responsible for teaching the Word of God to their children. And you can't assume that just because the church has a Sunday school, that's how your children are going to learn about the Bible. It's not the responsibility of the Sunday school. It's your job to do this. If you are a parent and you do not know the Bible, you should immediately begin reading and studying it, because at the final judgment, God will hold you as parents and not the elders or leaders of your church responsible for teaching your children the Christian faith. And this is the responsibility of both parents. I'm not going to get into a big discussion of the role of men and the role of women. and the different views that are out there. But in the book of Proverbs, the teaching of the mother and the teaching of the father are placed side by side. And I want you to realize that that is absolutely unique. There are certain books in the Old Testament that we call wisdom literature. The book of Job, the book of Ecclesiastes, the Song of Songs, and the book of Proverbs. This is what we call wisdom literature. It has certain characteristics, and many of the things in those books can be paralleled outside of the Bible. So if I could bring you a book this morning that contains literature from Egypt, from Mesopotamia, translated into English, so that you could see. There's no excuse. You don't have to say, I don't know Egyptian. I don't know Assyrian. I don't know Babylonian. I can't read Hittite. All of this is translated into English. And you can see that many of the things in the Old Testament are paralleled in the book of Proverbs, for example. So there are some things in the book of Proverbs that are exactly like things that we find in ancient Egypt. There's a document called, in the book of Proverbs, there's a section called the 30 Sayings of the Wise. 10 of those 30 sayings are absolutely identical to the wisdom of Amenemope, which is a document that comes from Egypt from between 1000 and 600 BC. And yet, one thing that is absolutely unique is the teaching of the mother. No other book in the ancient Near East mentions the teaching of the mother and puts that side by side with the teaching of the father. So I just want to make that clear, because even at a place like Southern Seminary where I teach, we had one of the administrators who a very strong idea about the role of the male, and I believe that men should be leaders in the church and in the home. But in their home, if the child asked a question of a spiritual nature, the mother was not to answer, but to wait until the father got home. And I'm here today to tell you that that is biblically wrong, because the book of Proverbs puts the teaching of the mother side by side. I have all of the verses there. You don't even have to get out of concordance and look them up. I already looked them all up for you. They're right there. Puts the teaching of the mother side by side with the teaching of the father. And this is also true in my personal experience, because I was led to faith in Jesus Christ by my mother, not by my father, who had more training than most Canadian pastors when he started in 1954. He had 6 years of Hebrew and 4 years of Greek. And he was one of the most educated Canadian pastors of the time. But it was my mother who led me to faith and trust in Christ. So, and this, I want to tell you, is one of the reasons why the Old Testament is very strong about Israelites not marrying the Canaanites. It's not because they were like Hitler and had this concept of racial purity. It's because both parents have to be believers in order to raise the children. That's why. That's why the Old Testament is very strong against divorce, because you need two people who are both believers to bring the children up in the faith. It's a job for two, and that's the way the Bible has designed it. I want to just talk briefly about I've made 2 points. One is that education of our children is an all-encompassing thing. You may not think of yourself as a philosopher. You may not think that you're a theologian. But everyone in this room, has a story in their minds that governs the way they think about the world and the way they act. And that's what I mean by your world and life view. And if we are Christians, we want that story to come from the Bible. And we want that to be the window through which we look at everything and decide everything and do everything, and that's the window we want to pass on to our children. And it will affect every area of life. So we can't divide life up into religion and science or something like that. Secondly, education is the responsibility of the parent, and it's not the responsibility of the church, and it's not the responsibility of the state. And Pastor Jason would be the first one to tell you, as I don't know exactly what your title is here, but it has something to do with family ministry, that he's not here to take away your responsibility as parents. He is trying to encourage and equip you as parents to do your job. And that is one of the problems in our society, is that when problems occur, we often take the authority away from the people who should be doing the job. So in our society, when families break down, then the state steps in and actually takes the children away from the parents and tries to do the job. But that's not a biblical answer. The biblical answer is to equip the parents to do what God has called them to do. There's a lot more that I could say. I just want to actually focus on one or two things very quickly. The third section, C, education, its method and manner. What does the Bible give us any principles on how we should be doing this? And here I'm going to express these principles as principles, and then as we see the dramas, I guess you pronounce that word differently in the United States, but I hope you know what I'm talking about, the dramas and the skits, you will see the practical application. We see there are two things I want to emphasize. First of all, in Deuteronomy 6, one of the principles is we see that this educating, this rearing, this training, this bringing up of our children is both formal and informal. So you notice the first thing is you shall repeat them, or you shall teach them. So part of what you're doing as a parent involves formal sessions. So you sit your child down and say, I'm going to give you a little talk. This may even take 5 minutes. It might even take 10 minutes. I mean, we can sit down and spew sports statistics for 10 minutes, so we should be able to sit down and talk about the Bible for 10 minutes. So there's a formal aspect, and then there's an informal aspect. Notice what the verse goes on to say. You talk about it when you get up, when you lie down, when you come in, when you go out, when you're walking by the way. These are figures of speech. By mentioning two opposites, it means everything. Okay? Let me just illustrate this so you understand this. Talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk along the road. This is a figure of speech called a merism. You don't have to remember that word. In which you indicate totality by mentioning the two opposites. Okay? So if you're driving through the country and you come to a very small town, and there's one store, a country store. And in that store, they sell everything from soup to nuts. Have you ever heard an expression like that? They sell everything from soup to nuts? We do in Canada. I don't know. You'll have to figure out what they say in Litchfield. It means they sell soup on the one hand, they sell nuts on the other hand, and they sell everything in between. And so that's what this expression means. When you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, means all of your activities. So he's just giving two opposites to as a way of expressing totality. The Hebrew Bible is full of these things. The first one is in verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Did you know that the Hebrews don't have a word for universe? They mention the heavens on the one hand and the earth on the other hand, and that's their way of saying the whole ball of wax. So all of your activities, when you lie down, when you get up, so in other words, every opportunity is a teaching opportunity. And that takes a lot of love and selflessness on our part because it's much easier just to skip it and go along than it is to stop and to take the time to explain what's involved in this situation, what we're learning here, and to look at whatever is happening through the window of your Christian world and life view. So the first principle is that the education is both formal and informal. In fact, this is exactly the way Jesus taught his disciples. So Matthew chapter 5, we have the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus sat down. In the first century, when a rabbi sits down, it means this is teaching time. Serious teaching time. And the book of Proverbs begins with 10 lectures from the Father to the Son. These are not fireside chats. They're, sit down, young man, I'm going to talk to you for a few minutes about a serious topic. So there are formal times and then there are informal times, and we see that when Jesus has the disciples with him in every situation so that they can see how he walks, how he talks, how he treats people, and how he responds to every situation. The second principle is very, that I want to, and I want to close with this, comes from Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, which is in here somewhere. I wrote this, but I don't remember what's in it. So, actually, this doesn't seem to be in here, at least I don't. Ephesians, page 3, there it is. So, Paul says in Ephesians that we are to bring up our children in the discipline or warnings of the Lord. And I just want to ask I just want to stop for a moment and ask, what does Paul mean? When Paul says, bring your children up, train your children up in the discipline of the Lord, in the training of the Lord, or the warnings of the Lord, all of those are possible translations, and you can see the discussion here. What does he mean by this? Well, the phrase, the discipline of the Lord, only occurs two other times in the Bible. One is in the book of Proverbs, where it's saying that the Lord disciplines us the way a father disciplines his children. So that assumes that you know how a father disciplines his children, and then you can understand how the Lord treats us. So that verse doesn't help us at all, because it assumes that we already know what is meant by it's using the human situation to explain the divine situation and doesn't tell us what the discipline of the Lord involves. The other place is in the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 11. And Paul and Moses says in chapter 11 verse 2, this is on page number seems to be missing. Anyway, the next page, Remember today, your children were not the ones who saw and experienced the discipline of the Lord your God, his majesty, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, the signs he performed, the things he did in the heart of Egypt, both to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and to his whole country, what he did to the Egyptian army, to its horses and chariots, how he overwhelmed them with the waters of the Red Sea, and as they were pursuing you, how the Lord brought lasting ruin on you. It was not your children who saw what he did for you until you arrived at this place. So you have seen the discipline of the Lord. What does he mean? He means God, the actions of God that demonstrate, I'm going to summarize this, that demonstrate kindness towards his people and judgment on the enemy. So this is what the discipline of the Lord, all of these things here. So for example, what he did to the Egyptians, that was the discipline of the Lord. What he did for Israel, that was the discipline of the Lord. In other words, he's summarizing everything that the Lord did for them. For example, what did the Lord do for them? Well, he provided a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Now, you may not think that that's important, but my son was in the Marines, and he's been in a lot of deserts. He used to call us up and say, Dad, I've just checked off another desert in the list of deserts in the world. And so what do we learn about deserts? Well, two things. They're very hot in the daytime, and they're very cold at night. So they could be over 120 during the day, and they could go down to minus 30 the very same night. Did you realize that? And so this was not, the cloud and the fire was not just some kind of trick. God was actually, the cloud was protecting them from the unbearable heat of the sun, and the fire was keeping them warm at night. And Israel was at the very beginning of its relationship with God, so this is God's toddler training. What do you do when you have a toddler? Well, you say, don't go and touch the stove, right? But of course, they're going to run over and do that. So what are you going to do? You're going to go over and grab them and haul them out of the way. And then maybe as they get a little bit older, you're going to slap their hand or something like that. You're going to teach them to listen to your instruction. How did the Lord teach the people to follow him? Well, if you didn't stay with the Lord, you fried or you froze. Very simple. Toddler training. Every day, bread fell from heaven. Water came out of the rock. Their clothes didn't wear out. Their shoes didn't wear out. These are the good things that God did for them. And then there were acts of judgment where God used plagues to judge the gods of Egypt and to judge the Egyptians and to judge the Pharaoh and his army pursuing. They drowned in the Red Sea. So what I think we can say is that the discipline of the Lord are acts of grace or kindness on the one hand and whole truth on the other. And what that means, this is very instructive for us as parents. That means when you deal with your children, you are to combine acts of grace and truth. What this means is, grace means generosity, kindness, love, mercy, pity, all the soft virtues, right? And truth is all of the hard virtues. This is where the line is. You stepped over it. And there are consequences. This is the difficulty as parents is finding a balance every day between the grace and the truth. But at least the Bible lays out this principle. How are we to raise our children? We're to bring them up in the discipline of the Lord. What is the discipline of the Lord? It's the way he combined graciousness and truthfulness in raising his children. So what is the story of God raising his children? The whole Old Testament. That's God raising his children. Israel, in Exodus chapter 4, it says, God says, Israel is my son, my firstborn son. Let my son go that he may serve me. So if you want to see how God raises his son, read the Old Testament. And you will see acts of kindness and acts of truth. There are times when God goes the ultimate limit in saying, you know, you're weak, you're frail, you're fragile, you can't handle this. Or now is the time that I'm drawing the line, and boom, you are going to feel the consequences. So we see here, I've taken time to lay out four principles. Education is all-encompassing. It's a whole world and life view. Secondly, education is not the responsibility of the church or the state. It is the responsibility of the parents, and it's time for us to take that back. Thirdly, the Bible does show us some principles on how to go about that. And one is we combine formal with informal training. And secondly, we combine acts of grace and truth. So I hope that helps as we lay out some principles. In the next session, I'm gonna do one of the skits, right? So shall I talk about that then at the beginning? Okay. Okay. No, but I could show them the book. Would that be useful? Yeah. Somewhere I've got a book here. One of the things that we want to do in this parenting seminar is actually show parents how to conduct, I don't know what word you want to call, your family altar, your family worship, your family devotions, a time where you pray, sing together, or teach the Word of God and pray together. Whatever time, whatever name you want to call that, we are going to model that in one of the skits. Not that the way that I do it is the only right way, but I was blessed with a Christian heritage, and many people today haven't grown up in Christian families, and they've never seen anybody model this. And so we thought we would help do that today. I want to show you. I think they'll still be able to hear me if I put this down. One resource, and I don't know to what extent this is still available. There was a 23-volume set called the Zondervan Book of Life, and there are many Bible story books for younger children that go through the whole Bible. This is one of, but most Bible story books focus only on the narrative in the Bible. So how many Bible story books have you seen that talk about the high priest's robes, building the tabernacle, the sacrifices in Leviticus? How many talk about the messages in the Proverbs? The messages in the Proverbs or the messages of the prophets. So a lot of the books that are out there are actually based only on the narrative parts of the Bible and don't cover the other parts of the Old or New Testament. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is 23 volumes, and it covers the whole Bible. So the book that I brought today has to do with the tabernacle, and I'm going to illustrate that. This was these books were produced in 1980, but they were produced on the with a quality like National Geographic. I just want to show this to you. Each chapter has four parts. This is a one paragraph summary of what the chapter is about. Then this is the act, this is pretty much the text of the Bible that is altered slightly for children. All right, so this is really the text of the Bible. And you can see that there are beautiful pictures, just like in National Geographic. So this is done on the scale of National Geographic. And there's helpful information from archaeology. For example, there were cherubim in the Holy of Holies. There were cherubim on the curtains. What does a cherub look like? Certainly not like the ones on the Valentine's cards. Here's a picture of a cherub from the ancient Near East, so that you can visualize this the way it was visualized in the culture that Israel lived in. The next section is called the Bible for Daily Living, and this gives you some things to do if you want to expand, if you want to study this topic further. And then the last section is called The Bible Comes Alive, where they try to make the section applicable to life today. And what you can do is, the first time I went through this, my kids were fairly small, I actually read the whole 23 volume set twice to my children by the time they were 10 years old. Okay? So the first time I went through it, I just read the Bible part, and I didn't read the other sections. See, and the second time we went through it, then I added on the other sections. So you can actually each section or each lesson can be taught at several levels of understanding, if you follow what I'm saying.